Good morning, everyone. I call this regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:03 a.m. on May 29th, 2018. Regarding opening comments, I will just say that last week was the Williston Basin Petroleum Conference, and I was able to spend a pretty fair amount of time down there, and really was excited to see the excitement coming out of those people. There's kind of a renewed energy and renewed exuberance, almost similar to 2012 when I was there. And it kind of, I thought, come down a little bit in 2016, but it really was reinvigorated at this conference, I thought. One of the big differences, though, and through all the previous years, I guess it's probably been a slow evolution to this. And when I say previous years, I'm not talking about over the, I think, close to 30 years they've had this, but since 2012 that I've been attending every other year when it's in Bismarck. But I really noticed this more this time than I have in previous conferences. Before, a lot of the discussion, especially going all the way back to 12, was about bigger things like man camps. And, you know, this outfit's man camp can be constructed more quickly, and this one has more safety features, or great big gaskets or drill bits or physical kind of construction-related things. And now it seems like so much of the discussion is about technology and data gathering and things like that. It's interesting how the field has matured as well as technological advancements have matured, and it's really become a high-tech industry. And so very interesting conference, I thought. That's all I have. Commissioner Crashes?
Thank you. Good morning. I would echo the same thoughts. I was able to take in part of the Petroleum Conference, and two things in particular that I attended, seminars, presentations. One was on pipeline monitoring, and we continue to hear more about that. Everything from nanotechnology
Do I need to start over again? Okay. Here's the abbreviated version. I was at the conference as well, was able to take in part of it, and a couple of the seminars, one was related to pipeline safety and talking about a project that the EERC is working on related to nanotechnology. Those are the tiny microscopic chips that actually detect, if they get outside of the pipeline, that's recognized, and then it's very immediate, but that project continues to be worked on. Met with another group of individuals, pipeline operators, that were also working on something that is somewhat of a problem, I think, in terms of their, when oil is moving through a pipeline, there can be slack in the line. And when there's slack in the line, you don't immediately notice a significant pressure drop. It might just be because of slack in the line. It might be because there's a problem. So they're working on accelerating the monitoring system and the devices used, so when they can actually tell if it's slack in the line or if there's a problem. So that, I thought, was incredibly important because, you know, pipeline safety obviously starts when the pipe goes in the ground and how it's designed and the terrain that it crosses. But once that pipe is in the ground and it's buried, we also have to have safeguards in place to make sure that there is a problem. We can quickly recognize that problem and get the line shut down. We strive for perfection, but the reality is we live in an imperfect world, and occasionally things will happen. So advancing technology is really important. And then another seminar I took part in was and listened in on was related to cybersecurity, and that continues to be an area of focus, as it should be. And that can be anything from the facility itself to hackers trying to get into a system and shut it down or to cause problems. So cybersecurity it's just part of the world we live in right now. While we like the advancements in technology and we like the internet and being able to interact electronically, it also opens the door for bad actors that want to do things that aren't favorable, to say the least. And then just the other takeaway I had was it does seem to be more stable in terms of the type of development that's taking place in the oil patch currently. But it also means that we're going to see more infrastructure development occurring. We're seeing a lot of it already. But as more wells go in, it takes more gathering infrastructure, gathering lines. It takes more transmission lines and takeaway capacity, as well as processing plants that are taking advantage of the abundance of natural gas. So I thought it was a good conference, and especially happy with the focus on safety and security.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, I would have some of the same conclusions from the conference, and I think the media coverage also suggested the same things. The Bakken, they're doing more with less and really working to try to decrease the footprint and improve the industry's environmental outcomes. And so I think it's just moving in the right direction. It's exciting to see. On a slightly different or dramatically different note, twist, I'd like to also just comment about Memorial Day yesterday. I had an opportunity to run out to the Veterans Cemetery, and everyone should go out there this time of year and take a look at those graves with all the flags. It is a very touching scene, and all the flowers on them, and to have two dads now, Mike's dad and my dad, both buried out there, and my mom, it just really gives you pause to reflect on the significant commitments so many people have made to our freedom and to the defense of our country and to the defense of democracy in the world. And we all benefit from it. So we all ought to take time, not maybe just on Memorial Day, but sometime in the couple weeks surrounding Memorial Day when the graves are all decorated and there's flowers galore out there, to just swing by and pay your respects to those who have done so much for all of us and our freedoms. That's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Well, that's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. I was also to a different Memorial Day service, and it was touching and needs to be remembered more than one day a year. It also reminded me of a lighter point. Over the weekend, the state Class B girls track champions are from Hazen now. Again, this is like the fourth in a row and about the 10th or 12th in the last 20 or so years. But we'll keep adding them up. We like it.
See, Mr. Chairman.
Go Bison.
Can I add one more thing?
Absolutely.
And I like the Go Bison part.
That's Hazen Bison.
I know, but I like it. there were a couple of instances over this past weekend of farmers who were moving equipment, and they the equipment was too high, I think, in both cases. And I haven't confirmed the second one. It happened on Sunday, but haven't confirmed it yet. But I believe both were pulling cultivators that as equipment gets larger and larger, the one caused a significant outage in the Lansford, Max Bass, and Glenburn area, and for about 5.5 hours, roughly, 587 customers were out of power. But the implement apparently snagged an overhead line and pulled it down and, of course, caused the outage. And then there was another instance in Manville where a tractor pulling a cultivator, and that was confirmed that it was a cultivator. So just a reminder to farmers and anyone. And we talk a lot about call before you dig. In fact, I brought my 811 mug today. It's more like a thermos, but it's large. But I like coffee, so that's good. But just please be careful out there.
Okay, good reminder. If no one is opposed to this idea, I'd like to move consent item RC3 to the regular agenda, in which case it would become RC4, and also consent item JF4 to the regular agenda, in which case it would become RC5. Seeing no objection, we'll make those two changes. That leaves six items on the consent calendar. I move approval of those six items plus previous meeting minutes.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, so moving into the regular agenda then, RC1, I move the Commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in North Dakota Network Company designated eligible carrier cancellation application, case number PU-18-91.
Second.
On July 31st of 2003, the Commission designated North Dakota Network Company, I'll refer to that afterwards, from here on as NDNC, as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving Federal Universal Service financial support in the study area served by SRT Communications, primarily around the Minot area. NDNC was a subsidiary, is a subsidiary of SRT, and using their wireless personal communications facilities. On March 22nd of 2006, then, almost 3 years later, the Commission designated NDNC as an ETC in the expanded area in which NDNC is licensed by the FCC. On March 13th of this year, we received notice of NDNC's intention to relinquish its ETC designations. As of February 28th of 2018, NDNC is no longer providing wireless service under federal law prior to permitting an ETC to cease providing universal service in an area. The State Commission shall require the remaining ETCs to ensure that all customers served by the relinquishing carrier will continue to be served. We have reviewed the documents in this proceeding and find that it has not been shown that customers served by NDNC will not continue to be served by the remaining eligible telecommunications carriers for Lifeline service. That would include SRT, and for wireless service, that would include Verizon and New Singular, which is AT&T.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the Commission publish notice of the 2018-19 telecommunications relay service surcharge in the daily newspapers of general circulation in the state of North Dakota, Public Service Commission Telecommunications Relay Service Miscellaneous Case Number PU-18-162.
Second.
On April 21st of 1993, Governor Schaefer signed legislation that established a program to provide specialized telecommunications services and equipment to the telecommunications impaired. The program is funded by an access line surcharge paid by the customers of local exchange companies and radio communication service providers, in essence, cellular providers, so they do also pay into this. The program is administered by the state ITD. Before June 1st of each year, the PSC calculates the amount of the surcharge based on cost data and other information provided by ITD. We have calculated the 18-19 surcharge to be included in bills to customers would be 4 cents per access line per month. That will raise revenue of about $322,000. Their expected expenses are a little more than that, but they have a positive ending balance and are able to carry that over, so this should be sufficient. Again, this year it's been 4 cents for quite a while. Perhaps my only question is whether Commissioner Fedorchak did a press release on this for Governor Schaefer in 1993 or not.
I think I probably did.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, we'll have less acronyms on this one. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-18-163 canceling facility-based grain buyer license numbers 2088 and 2072 respectively issued to CHS Incorporated at the Roarville and Velva, North Dakota locations, and ordering that business at Roarville and Velva, North Dakota is discontinued.
Second.
We received a request from CHS to discontinue licensing for these facilities at Roarville and Velva. These facilities have been closed. They are empty, and there are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts, and so staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will say I don't know much about Roarville, except that it's northeast of Devil's Lake up there. But Velva is, of course, the birthplace of television correspondent Eric Severide, who was the first person to report the fall of Paris during World War II.
Really?
Yes. He, born in 1912, left there when the bank closed in 1925, so he was, you know, there as a youngster, but for quite a fair amount of time. And they moved to Minneapolis and went on to a great career.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and now the new RC4, which had been on the consent calendar, is RC3 before this. This is kind of a log motion, so listen carefully. Effective with receipt of written notification satisfying the condition precedent stated in this motion, I move the commission approve a change in the exchange boundary between West River Telecommunications Cooperative's St. Anthony Local Exchange and Quest Corporation's Mandan Local Exchange, and a change in the exchange boundary between West River Telecommunication Cooperative's Elgin Local Exchange and Quest Corporation's Morristown Local Exchange, and issue the corresponding amended certificates of public convenience and necessity in West River Telecommunications Cooperative / Quest Corporation Mandan St. Anthony Morristown Elgin Exchange Boundary Agreement case number PU-18-90. I further move that the condition precedent to the effectiveness of this motion is the receipt by the Commission of written notification from West River Telecommunications Cooperative that federal universal service support to West River Telecommunications will be adequate for the added service area and end user subscribers.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
So what we have here is a very small handful of customers in two rural areas south and west of Mandan who it is not cost effective for anyone to provide service to them for anywhere near any kind of a reasonable price without universal service support. These are in Quest exchanges, as the long motion stated, one in the Mandan exchange, one in their Morristown exchange, or part of it in Mandan, part in Morristown. They are adjacent to West River Telecom areas that have been or are being rebuilt with fiber. Again, two separate exchanges, but between these two areas, they would serve about 8 or 10 people only. So they're very small. Now, the precedent, the condition precedent here is whether West River can, in fact, get these areas qualified for USF support. Because if not, they can't afford to upgrade these to fiber either. And so if that support is not forthcoming through FCC, then this would revert back to how it is under Quest and not burden West River with this very expensive to serve two areas. But if this is satisfactory and the FCC will grant them that universal service support, this is the first step that needs to be done, that now it would effectively be West River's area and they can go ahead and use it. So it's kind of a circular thing. They need this before they can get the USF, but this is contingent on the USF actually being forthcoming. It's a great example of these two completely different companies working together and being willing to do what it takes, if it's at all made possible by the FCC through the Universal Service Fund, to bring better service to this handful of customers. And so I do appreciate both companies. They've both invested a lot of time and effort into trying to craft this in a way that someone doesn't get left holding the bag, in a way, but also trying their best to make it possible to bring better service to these people.
Is there any further discussion?
Just to comment further on Randy's last point, I do really appreciate the companies working together on this. We hear from customers fairly often who are out in the rural areas and would like to have service from either one or the other companies, either the co-op or the private company. And I think it's sometimes difficult for them to understand why they don't get to pick. And in this, you know, in most areas, there are competitive companies serving in most areas of the state, but the really rural areas, that's not the case. And so it's great when these companies can join forces and try to find the best path forward for getting the highest quality service to the rural folks. And I think this is an example of that. And I hope it might also be a model moving forward for some others. It might not work across the board. Maybe it will only work in this one situation. But the fact that they're working together and exploring this avenue, I think, says a lot and provides some encouragement for the future, recognizing that broadband services are a big deal for everybody, whether you're in a city or a rural area. And we want to be able to make the best use of the resources that exist to get that service out to all parts of the state. So kudos to the companies in this regard and to our staff for being creative and trying to figure out how we could come up with a deal to recognize that we need FCC to take action first. And so I think this is a good model. So thank you for your work on it too, Randy.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and lastly, for my portfolio, RC5, which had previously been consent JF4, I move the commission execute a contract with K2 Engineers and Consultants Incorporated for construction inspection services in One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC Bear Creek Gas Plant Expansion Project, Dunn County, siting application case number PU-18-21.
Second.
This is just the inspection services part of that. We've already approved the project, and K2 Engineers and Consultants would be doing the inspection services.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Let me just add again, based consistent with the comments I made earlier, pipeline safety does start with the design and construction of a facility, and having these inspectors out in the field to ensure that it is being done properly equates to a safer line being put into service when the time comes that it is covered and then goes into operation. So it's very important that every step along the way is done extremely well and appropriately, and again, to minimize the chance of any future problems down the road.
Well stated.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have just two items on the agenda. First one, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Hess North Dakota Pipelines LLC, Keene Oil Gathering System Conversion, McKinsey Siting Application Case Number PU-18-24.
Second.
So in January, Hess filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit concerning the location of approximately 19 miles of 10-inch and 16-inch pipeline existing in McKinsey County. On staff went through the application, deemed it complete, and we held a hearing on that on April 10th in Watford City. This is a conversion project. It consists of approximately 15 and a half miles of existing 10-inch pipeline that was constructed as a gathering system in 2014 and 2015 from the Hess Hawkeye Oil Facility and leading to the Arrow facility in south about 15 and a half miles. It's a 10-inch line. And then 3.5 miles of existing 16-inch crude oil pipe that was built in 2016 and 2017 from that Arrow facility to the DAPL pipeline terminal receiver. They want to convert this gathering system into a transmission system, basically to put more throughput through the line, and they need to add some booster pumps to the line, which triggers their need for a transmission pipeline permit from us. The estimated cost of the project is about $114 million. That includes the cost of the three booster pumps and the other conversion costs. The construction will begin at the Midway booster pump in late 2018 and anticipates the fourth quarter 2019 in-service date for the Midway booster pump. So it's a conversion. So the pipe was already constructed, as I indicated, and operational as a gathering system. So our process in the hearing went through everything like we normally do with the SHPO surveys and reports, and they've concurred that there's no significant sites impacted. The Hess also provided information on any other exclusion areas or in the area. There are no other exclusion areas. There are some avoidance areas, however, and one of the main ones on a conversion is a location close within 500 feet of a residence, school, or place of business, and there were five of those in this along the line on this case, and they received the waivers from all of those residences or businesses. See, they did not find any other avoidance areas in the area. So also throughout the hearing, we discussed a number of different issues. They provided a late-filed exhibit indicating the depth of cover from the original construction. That's an important point for us to cover in the conversion area, conversion instances, and in this case, the depth of cover for the existing pipelines is a minimum of 5 feet throughout the length of the line. We also talked about the sound and noise levels from the addition of the booster pumps, and they provided information to us on the noise output of those pumps, and the most important piece being that they provide information that the noise levels 100 feet from the buildings are calculated at 30 decibels, and the nearest residence is over 1 mile away. so that shouldn't provide any sound problems for the nearest residents. We talked extensively about the leak detection and the monitoring also of this pipe as a conversion facility, and some of the work that's being done on pipeline safety really will have a huge impact on lines such as this that are operated as gathering lines initially and have multiple points of addition, and it's more difficult to balance the lines in those cases and to monitor them. But Hess did testify and provide additional information on the record after the hearing that they're going to employ multiple leak detection methods that are overlapping and complementary in their approach to allow identification of potential leaks. And there's a lot of additional information provided in our record about that, but they will have a supervisory control and data acquisition system on the line, and they will provide 24/7/365 monitoring of the line. So those were some of the main issues brought up during the hearing. With all of those pieces in order, I think that this is one of those projects that shows innovation by the companies. It shows them adapting to the existing market and regulatory conditions. And they originally intended this line to carry gas or to carry oil across the lake, but they ran into a hurdle in permitting the project and converting some existing lines under the lake north and to take the oil that way. Meanwhile, the DAPL line was constructed and completed, and they have an on-ramp to the DAPL, so they're converting this line. Rather than going north flowing, they'll go south and take the oil, gather it, and pump it to the DAPL line. And all in all, I think it's an example of maximizing the existing infrastructure, reducing the environmental impact by not requiring the construction of a different, entirely new line, maximizing the existing infrastructure, and minimizing environmental impact both by using that infrastructure to its most and by also using pipelines in general and taking advantage of the capacity on the DAPL pipeline. So I think we've covered all the key items that lead us to the minimal impact conclusion, and I'm pleased to support this order today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just concur with Julie's comments, and I was especially happy with what the company is doing from a leak detection standpoint. And I think the multiple overlapping mechanisms that they will have in place it's incredibly important that they do that, and I was pleased that they brought that forward. And then just the second part, this does tie into DAPL, and DAPL is rapidly approaching full capacity, and pieces like this, pieces of infrastructure like this, add to that. So takeaway capacity as we move forward, and if oil production in the basin, Williston Basin, continues to grow, then the question does remain, how are we going to get that oil moved to market? And we're starting to see a slight uptick in use of rail again. And very small, but when you go from 1.2 million barrels of oil production per day, if we go to 1.3 million and takeaway capacity is being maximized already with existing infrastructure, that will lead to either greater reliance on rail to move the excess production, or companies looking at new projects, future projects, to move the oil by pipeline.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, the previous comments are exactly right. As there's talk of a million and a half barrels a day, the governor's challenge of 2 million barrels a day. It is going to be an interesting future how we're going to move all that oil out of here. But for the present case, I do think, even though this doesn't garner huge amounts of attention because much of the infrastructure is already in the ground, this is another important piece of the puzzle to moving the product that we are already producing in the safest and most efficient manner.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Foxtail Wind, LLC, Northern States Power Company, transfer of site certificate citing application, case number PU-18-144.
Second.
On January 31st, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility number 53 to Foxtail Wind, authorizing construction of a 150-megawatt Foxtail Wind Energy Center and associated facilities in Dickey County. At that time, the commission was notified that the long-term plan was for the company to transfer that certificate to Xcel Energy, and now that is with a request that we're seeing before us. The issues to be considered in this case are whether NSP agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the certificate, and whether the requested transfer is compatible with public interest. Those interested are invited to comment in writing on the application, and any requests for hearing or comments must be received by July 9th of this year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay, and that includes our regular agenda for announcements. I don't have a lot, but I will say that starting tomorrow, May 30th, as well as Thursday and Friday, the 31st and June 1st, we have a formal hearing on Montana Dakota Utilities Company 2017 natural gas rate increase. That is case number PU-17-295. It's a formal hearing. We'll start here at 8:30 a.m. each day, so be here plenty early to book your elevator opportunities or be prepared to climb 12 flights of stairs, because we want to try to start right on time. There's a lot of information in this case, and so if we don't, we may end up being in trouble for being able to finish on Friday night, and I'm sure everyone has other plans for Saturday than
and
continue in this hearing.
As always, anyone interested can tune in live and watch the proceedings on the PSC website.
I'm sure that most people who aren't able to be here in person will be doing just that.
I hope they don't crash the line, but yeah. All are welcome.
And pop some popcorn.
And then beyond that, our next regular commission meeting is actually on a regular date and time, June 13th. That's a Wednesday, right here at 10 o'clock in the morning. We will stand in recess.
Mr. Chairman. May I add one last thing that I was debating on whether or not to do at the beginning, but I'm going to embarrass probably Commissioner Fedorachek. But last night, Julie's been participating in serving meals and been a big part of that for the United Way Emergency Shelter downtown at Sunrise Apartments. So last night, I was able to join in, and as well as Jack Hsu, Daryl Nitschke, Joan was working behind the scenes, and Kim Johndahl was there as well. And I just want to say thank you for letting me be a part of that. And it was great that we had different staff members from the PSC got involved with that. And I can't think of a better way to cap off Memorial Day weekend, and not only being thankful to the veterans that have given their lives for the freedoms that we enjoy, but also to be able to go out and help those that need a hand. So kudos to you, Julie.
Oh, well, it was fun, and it's my pleasure, and it's great to have the staff members, and hopefully we'll get another group together later on this summer to help. And any Monday anybody feels like doing it, feel free to join in.
Good project. Thanks for pointing that out. With that, we'll stand in recess, then we'll take some questions from the press. followed by a short break, and then we'll reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting.
You may have said how many barrels of oil are going to be in this conversion. Did you?
Sorry, 140,000 is the maximum number, I believe. I better double check that.
And did you say this existing pipeline?
160,000 capacity.
Okay.
Yep.
And this pipeline is existing under the lake? Is that what you said?
Nope, it's not existing. I'm sorry. It is. It starts right at the south border of the lake, southern edge, and goes south to maybe not right on the edge, but it's just south of the lake and goes all the way south, almost straight south down to the Arrow, Crestwood Arrow facility, oil facility. So I can show you on the map here, Dave, but it is west, straight west of Watford City and a little and north.
And how much of an increase is that, or what was it transporting as a gathering line?
You know what? I'm not sure. Do either of you recall what the capacity was as a gathering line?
I do not recall.
Let's see. I don't know that I... Because it wasn't all delivering maybe in the same exact way, I'm not sure that we received that information, Amy, but we can double-check that. Let's see.
There have been a few of these I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
There have been a few of these conversions of gathering lines to transmission lines. Are we going to see a lot more gathering lines go in now?
Go in?
Go on the ground. It's not. You're not directly responsible for that, for gathering lines, are you?
No, we don't. We don't cite the gathering lines. The Industrial Commission does provide some oversight of the gathering construction, and they have inspectors out there kind of spot-checking the gathering systems, and they've established standards for the construction that are in law, but they don't have to get a permit ahead of time to construct. And, they'll always be building more gathering lines because there's always new wells being developed, and every well has to have a pipeline to gather and collect the oil and bring it into the feeder systems. So they did talk about this particular conversion, though. There's already capacity in their gathering system, so they don't have to replace this with another gathering system.
And go ahead. I'm sorry. One in sense, the other in terms of gathering lines and then transmission lines. So it's you know, which comes first, and I think it's typically a coordinated effort, but oftentimes the transmission line then facilitates additional gathering line placement, and at the end of the day it helps to get trucks off the road, which is incredibly important. From a public safety standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, pipelines are safer in terms of getting oil to market versus rail transportation, for example. So does it start with a large line like Dakota Access, and then that creates an opportunity to convert a gathering line like this one to a transmission line, and then incenting further gathering line placement, smaller lines that go right to the oil pad versus trucking it to a terminal? And the answer is yes. It's the order is mixed, if you will, I would say, from my own perspective.
And I would just also add to that, you know, there's the question of the number of gathering lines, but then there's the question of the miles of gathering lines, because they need to get to these processing facilities as far as the gas part of it, or to the large pipelines for the oil part of it. And the last couple of years, while we don't have evidence of this, this is just my own logic, the last couple of years with the lower prices, the drilling's been pretty constrained to a small geographic region. Now with better prices, we're hearing that the drilling is going on at a increasingly larger geographic area, which means that the gathering lines that need to be added for them are going to be longer and cover more ground. So I think there is going to be a lot of gathering line activity.
Just to provide a more clear point on your question, Dave, the reason why this will still provide the purposes of gathering for the company, they're still using it to gather in the same way they did before. They just have to get a transmission line permit because they're adding the booster pumps. And the booster pumps allow them to push more oil through the line. And the booster pumps trigger the transmission line permit. That's how the law is written. If you, it's a gathering line until you add pumps or storage for additional, to move more oil.
The one thing about this that continues to, I think, when we're having the hearings and we're out in the field, we see landowners coming in to the hearings. And for some landowners, I talked to, and I don't remember if it was in the at the Grassy Butte hearing. It might have been. Or if it was at another function I was at. But one landowner was talking about having 8 lines go across their property. And then another one chimed in and said, well, I have 10. Mm-hmm. So one has 8 going across their property. One has 10. And that is something that we talk about. This line is existing, so the dirt has been moved, but it's really important, and especially for landowners, that they know that when these lines are put in, that there's good topsoil versus subsoil segregation and that the land is restored. So I think it indicates that companies are doing an increasingly better job in the Bakken with pipeline placement, because in Grassy Butte at that hearing, the one landowner that spoke was very complimentary about how things are going now. But in the early stages of the play, many companies were doing it right, but some weren't. And that becomes irreversible in many ways. If the topsoil isn't properly segregated, you just simply can't generate new topsoil, and we can't afford to wait between 100 and 500 years for another inch of topsoil to form.
I'll just also add that improvement didn't happen by accident. That was a lot of work by us to improve our standards, improving our inspection process, which we did in direct response to the landowners' requests and complaints during our hearings, and also in full cooperation with the industry, who was also eager to hold each other accountable and improve the end results, knowing that they can't get people to sign up if people don't believe that the land is going to be taken care of.
That was a long answer to that question.
Well, here's a quicker one. On the RC3, the CHS discontinuing the elevators at Roarville and Velva. Both elevators are empty.
Yes.
Are they going to be resold or are they going to be torn down? Do you know?
I'm not sure of that. And there was nothing specifically stated that there, you know, is a new owner operating it or a private party using it for storage. So leads me to conclude that right now they're just CHS still is the owner, but I don't have evidence of that. But they are for sure just discontinuing their license, and they're not going to be buying grain at those two sites.
Could be relicensed later, is what you're saying.
It's possible. Anything else? Okay, we will reconvene at 11 a.m. for the admin portion of the meeting.